Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back for our fourth segment in this very important conversation with my colleague, Claire Lopez, our Vice President for Research and Analysis at the Center for Security Policy. She is the co-author with me of See No Sharia, a brand new book about what has happened to our own government, our first lines of defense, as a result of the sorts of civilization jihad the Muslim Brotherhood and other Islamic supremacists have been waging so effectively, largely unknown to most of us here inside our country. And Claire, you were describing sort of one example of a kind of willful blindness on the part of some of our, well, first lines of defense. How has this come to pass inside the United States government? Is this really just another example of the subversive, stealthy practice of the Muslim Brotherhood, and one that has particularly ominous consequences?
Well, yes, it really is. Let's go back to the attacks of 9/11, right after which our government responded appropriately and very aggressively against those who'd attacked us, in a physical sense, of course, going to topple the Taliban in Afghanistan and rout out Al-Qaeda from there. But at the same time, at home, under the administration of President George W. Bush, the Muslim Brotherhood and figures, top figures within the Brotherhood in America, had already and long since penetrated the top levels of our national security. And evidence of that was the day after 9/11, when President Bush went to the big Islamic Center of Northwest Washington, D.C., and spoke inside of that mosque with cameras and photographers all around him, and intoned the words that would set the tone from that point forward about going after the Islamic terrorists that had attacked us on 9/11. And he said, "Islam is a religion of peace." And as we look at the photos from that day, standing all around him were top leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood. Notably, off of his left shoulder, within inches of the president, is Nihad Awad, the executive director of CAIR, Council of American Islamic Relations, which, of course, is Hamas doing business as CAIR in the United States. Nihad Awad, along with the other founders of CAIR, of course, having been one of the top leaders of Hamas in the United States at the time of the founding of CAIR. So the president is surrounded by these influence operators, I would call them, agents of influence. And those words, Islam is a religion of peace, really set the tone.
Yeah, how on earth did that happen? I mean, this is right after 9/11, as you say. Presumably, the president of the United States and the people around him would have been more alive to the danger of jihad than at any other time in the immediate wake of that horrible terrorist attack.
They'd already been penetrated and suborned going way back. I mean, literally, the Muslim Brotherhood came to America right after World War II. And there's a picture online, a famous photo of President Dwight D. Eisenhower in the Oval Office meeting with a delegation of Brotherhood individuals coming from Egypt in 1952. But beginning, let's move it up to the Clinton administration, we had senior Brotherhood, and as it turns out, Al-Qaeda operative in the United States, Abdurrahman Al-Amoudi, who penetrated all the way to the Oval Office. And that continued through the influence operations of such top Brotherhood affiliates as Grover Norquist, Suhail Khan, and Abdurrahman Al-Amoudi as well, in the all the way into the Bush administration. So the penetration operation was well advanced by the time 9/11 hit. And even though the military response was quick and decisive, the more important and, as we said before, insidious influence of jihad and of the Brotherhood promoting Sharia was hard at work behind the scenes, and that crippled our response in the long term. And beginning, like the book, our new book, See No Sharia, says, by taking aim at the language, the lexicon, and our ability to speak freely about where this threat came from. It didn't come as a bolt out of the blue, even though that's how 9/11 felt. It came from an ideology, and that ideology is Sharia.
Claire Lopez is our guest, the co-author with me, as she mentioned, of See No Sharia. And Claire, bring this up to the moment. As we look at the cumulative effect of this penetration and influence operations, going back, as you say, in earnest to, well, I think of it as Grover Norquist's enabled penetration of the Bush administration. But under the Obama administration especially, we've had this series of steps taken with respect to the lexicons that the various agencies are allowed to use, words that are not permissible. We've had, of course, training, including that you have conducted in some cases, interfered with, and trainers and materials purged. We've had the introduction of this term countering violent extremism. Sort of give us a flavor of what all of this has actually meant in practice.
Right. Well, I think the great purge, as we call it, of the training and the curriculum in the U.S. government was especially detrimental and a pivotal moment, really, in this struggle. Although the purge of the language and the change in the lexicon began under the Bush administration, I think that administration was more or less unaware. They didn't really understand what this was about. But come up to the Obama administration, and they know perfectly well what they're doing and have chosen proactively to ally themselves with the Muslim Brotherhood, to bring Brotherhood figures into the administration as advisors and appointees, preferentially over any other Muslims who are not affiliated with the Brotherhood. And so we saw a very determined agenda carried out under the Obama administration, which includes, of course, as we've said, the Great Purge beginning really 2011, 2012 in earnest, when books and presentations and language and certainly training curricula across the government throughout all the cabinet departments were purged of any references that would associate Islamic terrorism with the inspiration that drives it from Islamic law and doctrine and scripture. And that had a huge effect on the ability of the U.S. government and our first lines of defense, which would be the intelligence community, CIA, DIA, FBI, Department of Homeland Security, to know and to recognize, to name the enemy, and then to formulate and implement effective strategies to defeat that enemy, the global jihad movement, all who support jihad in any way, including the Brotherhood. So we were crippled from that point onward, and it began with the language. The language was so important.
Yeah. And speaking of language, just give us quickly a translation of countering violent extremism.
Right. This term comes into play during the Obama administration, and it is a substitute concept, if you will, for the original drive to go after the enemy wherever the evidence would lead, which was the way we did it right after 9/11. Pursue the evidence where the evidence leads. If it leads to Islamic Jihad, then that's the enemy doctrine. Well, countering violent extremism introduced with the help of Muslim Brotherhood advisors, who, by the way, were responsible for advising all of the U.S. government on the purge of the language. And then through their influence, this term was introduced instead. What is violent extremism? Well, it's anything anybody wants it to be. It's a completely anodyne term that means precisely nothing, which is the intent.
Or it means that actually there are violent extremists about whom we should be at least as worried as any other, namely constitutionalists, veterans, gun owners, Tea Party activists, and the like. Claire, when we come back, we're going to talk a bit more on the practical implications for public safety and national security of what's happened. That and more right after this.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.